G'day there. My name's Matt Brann, and right across the territory, this is the Country Hour. We're broadcasting today from Katherine and dedicating a large part of today's show to those impacted by cucumber green mottle mosaic virus. Now, a few months ago, no one had ever heard of this virus. It had never been seen before in Australia. Then all of a sudden, melon crops in this Katherine region started to show some very unusual symptoms. Since then, quarantine zones have been set up, watermelon crops have been destroyed, and now one farmer has been told not to move his pumpkins. Tell you more about that in a moment. The federal government has made drastic changes to the rules on importing seeds. And as for the town of Katherine, well, how is it coping? We'll find out. But first, to National Rural News.
Good afternoon, I'm Kath McAlone. The Department of Agriculture will boost biosecurity measures to prevent further incursions of the plant disease, cucumber green mottle mosaic virus. The virus, which affects produce like pumpkins, zucchinis, squashes, melons and cucumbers, has devastated the Northern Territory's melon industry. Imported cucurbit seeds will now need to be tested for the virus before being allowed into Australia, and the importation of plant material and nursery stocks will be suspended. Global seed producer and supplier Syngenta has been testing its seed for the virus since 2012 and has welcomed the government's announcement. The disease is believed to have come into Australia through imported seed, but Syngenta's Robert Cairns says he doesn't think his company is responsible.
We're just really conscious of the fact that seed is a potential source, and we want to do everything we can do to make sure that it's not from our seed. These testings are never 100%. We've certainly done all the testing to date and it's shown to be clear, so we hope that continues.
The increased biosecurity measures on importing seeds will provide little comfort to those already affected by the virus. John Etty from Katherine in the Northern Territory has already destroyed his entire watermelon crop and is now being told he can't sell his pumpkins. He says his pumpkin crop has been tested for the virus and the waiting period to get the results is stressful.
I'm still watering a crop that maybe I can't sell. I can't send them away, so I'm, pay wages to pick something that doesn't get sold. And it's very frustrating and tiring, and cause you just don't know which way to go, and it's just frustrating.
There are reports South Australian Country Fire Service volunteers are refusing to attend fires in protest over a rise in the state's emergency services levy. Earlier this year, the state budget scrapped a subsidy that had traditionally helped landholders pay the levy. This week, CFS Deputy Group Officer for the Streaky Bay and Ceduna region, George Baldwin, was organising a crew to go to a fire, but says he had two volunteers refuse to attend in protest over the high cost of the levy.
And I was a bit upset over it at the time. And I thought, well, geez, a bit of a poor attitude. But I just feel now, after I've had time to think about it, we've got to take a stand because us fellas, we're putting our life on the line. As we all know, we go into some horrific scenes at times and we don't get any compensation for it.
The owner of a citrus farm in the Riverina region of southern New South Wales is introducing passport checks of workers coming onto the property after immigration raids earlier this month. During the raids, 37 workers who were hired by a contractor were found to have invalid visas. Property owner Ken McDougall says it'll be time-consuming for the farm to carry out all the background checks on employees.
It virtually means that every morning before people start work that they're going to have to be checked out on the website. We're probably going to have to put on another staff member just to actually do that. I am concerned about the viability of the particular farms or these orchards because it's probably going to impose another 20% on top of our picking costs.
A new industry committee has been formed to combat fruit fly in Victoria's Sunraysia region. It comes after the demise of the Murray Valley Citrus Board last year due to a legal challenge to the grower levy it collected. Victorian Agriculture Minister Peter Walsh says a majority of citrus, table grape and stone fruit growers have voted to support the establishment of the new body. Mr Walsh says he hopes growers will also support a new compulsory levy to target current fruit fly outbreaks in the area.
People do have the opportunity to ask for a refund if they believe they're not getting any service out of that particular levy. I would be extremely disappointed if people did, because unless everyone works together, we are not going to be able to win this battle.
The latest figures for Australian wine exports show a continued trend in increased demand for premium wines. Total wine exports grew less than 1% to 688 million litres in the year to the end of September, while sales of wines priced at more than $10 a litre were up 14%. The value of exports remains steady at $1.78 billion. Andrew Kay of Wirrawirra Vineyards in South Australia's McLaren Vale says the export market is critical for the survival of Australian wineries because the domestic market is flat.
Really, for wineries to start to recover their position, the main opportunities for them are export markets. So if they have an opportunity to get back out into that space, then it's really critical for their longer-term survival. The sentiment is one that there's opportunities now, the dollar's starting to ease, and the sentiment's right. We need to take advantage of the opportunity while it's there.
And for today, that's Rural News. For more rural news and information, you can head online to our website at any time, abc.net.au/rural.
Thanks there, Kath. It's 11 past one.
You're listening to The Country Hour with Matt Brann on ABC Local Radio right across the Territory.
And a very good afternoon. If you'd like to get in touch with the program, our text number is 0487 99 1057. We are broadcasting today from Katherine. This region in the heart of the Territory has completely lost its watermelon industry. This region is ground zero for a virus that has the entire Australian horticultural industry on edge. It's called cucumber green mottled mosaic virus, and it's got the potential to damage so many crops that you and I buy from the supermarket every day. Melons, pumpkins, zucchinis, Lebanese cucumbers, the list goes on. A few months ago, no one had ever heard of this virus. It had never been seen before in Australia, and now it's here in Katherine, and it's been found on a farm near Darwin. Many believe it will soon be found beyond Northern Territory borders. The show today is dedicated to those impacted by the virus, both growers and those well beyond the farm gate. Earlier on, I got a chance to speak to John Etty. Now, John has been farming in this Katherine region for over 20 years. His farm has been quarantined. He's had to destroy his watermelon crop, and now he's been told not to move his pumpkins. I asked him what the last 3 weeks have been like.
It's been very stressful, worrying about whether we have an income for the rest of this year, which usually is when we end up with some profit this time of year. So not being able to send stuff away, and we've already lost 5-6 tons of watermelons that we couldn't send. They've been destroyed now. And then there was the risk of the pumpkins being quarantined, and then there wasn't, the not knowing what new rule comes up every day. So there's every day's brought another nail biting experience. Just feeling a bit isolated. We've actually only had the initial one visit from quarantine, and then the rest of it's been over emails or stories. There's a whole lot of gossip, and people talk about this and talk about that. You don't know what's the truth. People working within the government, some have been in a position controlling, and then suddenly they've gone and there's a new person in there. So it's kind of baffling how that's managed, really.
So you've destroyed your melon crop?
Yeah. And that's hard enough in itself when you spent, 3 months growing a crop, having lots of, I've had lots of problems just with pumps and irrigation and controlling weeds, and then having to get a decent crop, and then you've got to destroy it. It's pretty heartbreaking in a way to do that. And it's like having developed a place over 20 odd years, it's towards the end of it, when things should be coming together, it seems to be crumbling around you.
We know that you can't grow watermelons now for at least 2 years, and you won't be able to grow anything on that land for 12 months. Have you got a plan on what you may be able to do with that country in a year's time?
Yeah, I've got a plan. I've got alternative crops that I could grow. Obviously, with a quarantine situation like that, it's not going to be at all likely to be able to sell the property. So you've got to imagine working for more years, still paying a mortgage off. So, I've got a few other ideas, but stuff I can grow because we're organic, there's stuff that other people probably wouldn't contemplate if they're conventional.
Mm. Are you willing to share some crop ideas with us?
Possibly. I mean, there's not rocket science, but there is a demand in dry season or the southern winter for crops, onions, sort of in September. There's a shortfall of those. I've grown those years ago. Sweet potatoes is something that is in demand for organic stuff during the late winter.
Yep.
What else was? Oh, bananas is something that we can grow in Catherine still to be outside the banana freckle.
Well, there
thing,
might be a big gap in the market there very soon.
Well, there will be a gap in the market, but it's still a risk because you don't know how this banana freckle moves around. So you might invest in a hectare or so of bananas, do all the work, and then suddenly they find the freckle. So that could be not the smartest crop to go. It sounds like it might financially have a potential, but you know, you can still do the work and it'll be back to start again.
Watermelons is a big part of your business, but you also grow pumpkins. Now, I understand they've been tested for this virus as well. What can you tell us?
No, they were testing on Monday, but they haven't come back with any results yet. But today is the day the Grand Council of Quarantine are meeting to decide whether or not they will try and eradicate this virus in the territory, or they'll simply acknowledge that it's here and it's here to stay, and probably something that growers are going to have to live with anyway, when there will be no compensation. So it's not a win-win situation either way.
How long do you have to wait for these pumpkin tests?
I don't know exactly. I think probably from Monday they could have answers today or tomorrow, but all of this information from a whole range of properties is being presented at this meeting today. So by close of business today, we probably should have an answer if they can come to some consensus.
Mm-hmm. The crop looked healthy to you?
Yes. That's what makes it difficult. You know, I'm still watering a crop that maybe I can't sell. And the pumpkins are nearly ready. I can't send them away. So I'm, you know, pay wages to pick something that doesn't get sold. And
so at the moment, you can't sell those pumpkins?
No, because it has been gazetted. Came through yesterday. So that only came through yesterday, and then they've decided to have this meeting to decide on whether they're going to go through with the eradication or not. And so every day's had a new little bit of tension coming into the equation, and it's, you know, it's very frustrating and tiring, and because you just don't know which way to go, and it's not. Nothing I've got any control over, so I'm just trying to talk to people, get some information, and it unfolds, and then they've got a lot to discover about this particular disease, which they haven't ever contemplated worrying about before. And then you can think, oh, well, what's the next thing we've got to worry about? You wouldn't be a farmer for quids if you could get out of it, but nobody else wants to take farms on, it seems. They're very hard to sell, which is frustrating.
Yeah. And I'm only asking these questions because I guess a bit of a game changer if it pops up in another crop.
Well, it could, but it doesn't have an ability to destroy the whole crop completely, and it's less likely to be a problem if you've got a healthier soil with high amounts of organic matter in it. And probably follow sort of crop rotations and even fallowing. In the long term, it's something that could be managed anyway. So it's really about having export markets open and having the ability to send, say, to China, but I'm not going to do that and not very likely to.
Can this virus be eradicated? What's your thoughts?
Well, I'd only be preempting what the quarantine committee is going to come up with today. But from what I've read about it, I'd say it would cost a lot of money, take a lot of time, and be a lot of heartache that might be pointless in the end.
Will you be pursuing compensation?
Yeah, if at all possible, I have to. The bank doesn't really care whether we've got a virus or not. They want their pound of salt.
What would you like all the people listening today to know about?
That possibly they shouldn't take farmers and the food they get for granted, because the world is like heading towards changing climates. Diseases are moving around the world that hadn't moved before. Water security is, you know, up and down, more down than up. I just think they have to be thankful for the amount of food they can get and the variety and the price they're getting it, because we as farmers are struggling to make ends meet with what we receive at the farm gate. And you look at what things are in the supermarkets, and I just say they're cheap, but they're still double or triple what any farmer's getting at the farm gate often.
John Eddy, it's been a busy week. We really appreciate your time on the Country Hour.
Right, thank you.
Yeah, big thanks to John Eddy. He's been farming in this Katherine region for about 20 years. I doubt he's done it tougher than right now. And as for the concern that maybe his pumpkins will also be destroyed, well, the NT Department of Primary Industry has just made an announcement. I want you to stick with us, because straight after this song, we are speaking to the Territory's Chief Plant Health Manager, Stephen West, and I'm worried he's got news that will send shudders right through the NT's horticultural sector. This is the Country Hour, live from Katherine. But what's happening around this region in the horticultural sector is a concern. We're joined now by the Territory's Chief Plant Health Manager, Stephen West. Afternoon, Stephen.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I am well. We've just heard from John Eddy, who was concerned about the fate of his pumpkins. He's lost his watermelon crop. You've just made an announcement. What does it mean to his crop?
So what we've identified is we have found the virus in a pumpkin crop, and that detection has occurred on a property that has watermelons that are infected. So we haven't seen a movement to a new area, or to we're adding an additional property to the existing quarantines. So to make it very clear, so the property is already under quarantine for watermelons, and now we've identified the virus in the pumpkins on that property. And look, that's not uncommon from the point of view that you've got all the machinery operations, equipment, people movements, vehicle movements, etc., that are all able at some point to move the virus from one infected crop on a property into an adjoining host in some way.
So what does it mean for the pumpkin industry, and say for someone like John Eddy?
Well, what it means for people like John is that it doesn't mean that we're going to now go out and eradicate all pumpkins. One of the things that we've been doing is going back and resurveying now on the infected properties, the other cucurbit hosts that they grow, e.g. pumpkins and other things. So that's been a part of our ongoing surveillance. So we've taken those samples, and I was listening while John was speaking, and yes, he's had further samples taken, and he is awaiting results. So
it's not him who has tested positive.
Sorry?
It's not him who has tested positive in the pumpkin crop.
I can't answer that question.
Okay.
You know, on air, I can't discuss anyone's particular situation.
No, fair, fair.
But just to say that, it does not mean that all pumpkin crops in the Northern Territory will be eradicated. It means that we've got one property that has infected watermelons, and now we've identified it in the pumpkin crop that was nearby. So,
as the Territory's Chief Plant Health Manager, how much of a concern is it for you that it's now been found in another cucurbit?
Look, I'm not surprised that, that's occurred in the context of the property. It would have been a real surprise for us if we'd identified it, you know, in a completely separate property that was completely right out of the process that's currently being run. That would be a surprise. So, look, we're continuing our surveillance activities across the Northern Territory. You know, we're able to say that, you know, the southern end of the Northern Territory, you know, we've been doing all those crops down around Tea Tree, Ali Kerung, all that's all clean, that's all good. So it's not as though the watermelon industry in the Northern Territory has disappeared. It just means that in these particular properties and the one area in Katherine out of the Venn has been quarantined because that's where we found it. So we're continuing that task of, you know, doing surveillance, checking crops to try to establish how far is it. And then, you know, and I appreciate, you know, John's position and the things that he's talking about. And look, you know, I and others are having to have some really difficult conversations with people, you know, around all this. And
I'm sure.
We significantly understand. We don't appreciate all the depths of this, but we significantly understand we are talking about people's livelihoods and their business, and that's never easy. And, you know, it's devastating to be told your property's infected and now you've lost all your hard-earned money and all your work and effort, yeah, and you have got the bank banging on the door. So we understand that.
The department's just put out a media release which says a range of additional vegetables have been officially declared as potential host plants for cucumber green mottle mosaic virus in the NT. What does that mean?
Okay. Yes, we have done that. And the reason that, that's been done is because as we continue our surveillance, we want to be in the place of being able to respond rapidly to any further detections in any other crops. So this is a standard part of a process. So once it's been declared as a potential host, so, you know, it is a host of the virus. And so if we get a detection, then we can immediately put a quarantine on the property. And again, we're seeking to contain it at this point, identify where it is so that we can move to a place of eradication.
Okay. What I'm trying to understand is, say I'm a Vietnamese grower in Darwin's rural area. I'm not in a quarantine zone. What does this all mean to me? What can I expect, Stephen West?
Look, we'll be in the place of conducting surveillance. So they will get a visit from us. And we will be, you know, checking their crop and taking samples. And then, you know, obviously putting that through the laboratory process and then providing them information on that. This declaration doesn't mean that all of those crops are are going to be wiped out or anything. It's just a part of the legal process around declaring these are hosts. And so if we get a property, then we can action on that straight away.
You've already been doing a lot of work, a lot of checking of properties. And I understand today you can reveal that there's now an additional quarantine area that's been declared in Marakai. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah.
So what's the story there?
Well, we have had a declaration that was on watermelons. And so it's, I suppose, more of the same in the sense of, you know, a watermelon crop, and it is on a property. It has been gazetted. You know, the owner's been notified of that, obviously. And, you know, we've been working with them around, okay, what does this mean for that particular business?
What's the eradication plan? And can it be eradicated?
Look, we're in the place where we are, and I'll just pick up on, you know, John's comment in relation to, you know, the consultative committee on emergency plant pests.
Yes.
The consultative committee actually met yesterday. And so because of the urgency of all this, the meeting was brought forward. And it might seem that it's a day, but every day counts and things are changing every day in the information the Northern Territory is able to provide. So the Northern Territory is making the decisions around what needs to take place, and the CCPP, that consultative committee, we're providing information to them and they're assisting us in all of this process. So they met yesterday. And they were in a place of reviewing the information that was available at that point in time.
Yes.
And they are awaiting further information. And so...
But what about on that question, can it be eradicated?
Well, the position around eradication is that, and the process that we put in place on the individual properties is to seek just that. So we're containing the disease, but we're also trying to eradicate it on the individual properties. So that process that we've directed growers to take is to do that. Now, the big question, and again, John alluded to it, and others have been asking the question, the big question about this is, you know, once you've got rid of the crop, how long will that soil remain infected for? Because yep. the virus is able to stay in the soil. You know, I've continued to say that we will be reviewing that. There's a two-year quarantine. We will continue to review that. And I don't have to say, if the evidence, the scientific, if we're able to establish from a scientific base the evidence to say that it's less than 2 years that's required because of, let's say, for instance, we're in the Northern Territory, our environment is different, our soils are hotter, we get more rain, the organic matter breaks down quicker, therefore the virus disappears quicker, then that's a great thing.
Yeah.
But 2 years is the position at this point. And look, at the end of the day, we need to, you know, stick to that and then review it. It may, in actual fact, turn out that, and we don't know yet, but it may actually turn out that it might be a bit longer.
Right.
But at this point, we need to continue to work with that. But 2 years, on the best science, you know, we've put in place 2 years.
Okay. Just finally, Stephen West, we've seen what's happened with the banana industry, where a lot of properties that aren't infected will be wiped to save the wider industry and to maintain a certain status in the territory. If I'm a melon grower or I'm growing any of these cucurbits that today have been listed, I think I'm worried that I might be treated in the same way. Do we risk a wipeout of these crops to protect the wider Australian industry?
No, I wouldn't have said that that's the case. Definitely not.
Is there something, before I let you go, that you think growers in the territory should know about?
Look, we've sent out an industry update and we're providing as much information to industry as we can, and we've done that today to support this announcement that's gone on. And we're also encouraging growers to say, look, there's other information that's available on our website. Please go there and have a look. And that there is assistance that people can have as far as around their business. There's some counselling and other business counselling services, other business advice services that are made available free to people to assist them in some of the business decisions that they obviously need to make, like John, you know, and going to talk to the bank, you know, they can get assistance around those processes. So please make yourself available to take those options.
Stephen West, thank you for your time on the Country Hour today. It's appreciated.
No worries. Thank you.
Stephen West, he is the Territory's Chief Plant Health Manager. Now, still to come on the Country Hour, I'll bring you the latest on some pretty drastic changes that have been brought in by the federal government as to the rules on importing seeds into this country. And Faye Miller, the Mayor of Katherine, she's just come into the studio, so we'll have a chat to her about what this all means for the town of Katherine. Stick with us. This is the Country Hour.
On Q&A, politics on a global stage. Geoffrey Robertson's the Australian lawyer who tackles the world's most challenging cases. Jenny Hocking's the biographer of a political giant. Stuart Roberts, the former soldier who shares responsibility for our troops in Iraq. And Catherine King wants Australian medical teams deployed against Ebola. Together, they join an ad man turned magazine editor, Rowan Dean. Q&A. Monday, 9:35 on ABC.
Let's make our way across to the Weather Bureau. Marcus, how are you this afternoon?
I'm well, thanks, Matt.
That's the go. Hey, I'm in Katherine today. What can people in this region expect for the weekend ahead?
Sunny conditions.
Sunny, beautiful.
Pretty hot temperatures, up around 38 degrees or so as maximums, and minimums also pretty warm, but it could be worse for this time of year. But we're forecasting overnight temperatures getting down to about 22, 23. So it's not too bad for October, but it's still pretty hot days.
For all those people out there picking mangoes, that's warm. That's tough.
Yeah. At least it's a little bit drier than what you might expect at this time of year. Yeah. Your humidity in Tyndall at the moment is only about 15%. So even though it's quite hot, it's up around 38 degrees. So hot and dry inland.
Yeah. For the wider top end, you know, can we expect any storms or something exciting like that?
there's the odd one around, but they're very odd. This morning there was a storm near Port Keats. They just copped the edge of it. There was also a little storm in the harbour just after midnight, which is very tiny, and dropped 30 millimetres at Channel Island, which is, it was about the only place it affected, though. But that was about it. This afternoon, we're starting to see the odd shower pop up around the coastal areas where there's still a little bit of moisture from sea breezes and that sort of thing. But chances of getting anything are pretty slim.
Okay.
But there is a chance, especially down around Port Keats area and over on the Tiwis and Coburg, there's slight chances.
Right. What about the coastal waters? I was thinking of wetting a line Sunday.
Around the harbour?
Possibly, yeah. Well, it depends on what you tell me, Mark. I might have to go into the rivers if it's shocking.
No, I know. We're only forecasting winds around 10 knots, quite light early on, and then the sea breeze is coming in around 10 to 15 knots. But the sea breezes are blowing, right through into the evening, so in the morning is the best time if you don't want any wind, also coolest. But not a lot of wind around coastal waters. It should be pretty good conditions, really.
And what about Central Australia, the weekend ahead for those people?
Well, it's already pretty hot down there. We've seen temperatures get up to about 39 at Yallara and 37 at Alice Springs today.
Has it been sort of an above average temp October so far for the region? I get the feeling every day it's like...
Looking up the stats, my anecdotal...
You're feeling it in your waters,
feeling it,
Mark.
It has been pretty warm this month in Alice. They've had a few cool changes come through, but they haven't lasted very long. And otherwise the temperatures have been well up there. And that's not going to change this weekend. If anything, they're going to get a degree or two warmer. Could see 40 degrees at Alice on Sunday and maybe even 41 for Yallara, something like that. There is a bit of a cooler change coming in Monday, which will take the edge off the heat, knock it back down to about 35, and also take the overnight temperatures, which have also been quite warm. It'll knock them back down to the mid-teens. This is from sort of Monday.
Mm-hmm.
But that change doesn't last very long either before it starts warming up again later next week. So, continuing pretty hot down there. Chance of a little bit of shower activity and maybe even the odd storm in the far southwest.
In the southwest. But the southeast can't cop a break. Always in that little southwest.
And, what's probably even worse is that there's a little bit of cloud over that area at the moment, but it's really high and wispy, and it's not going to produce any rain.
All right, Mark, hey, thanks for the update. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Matt.
Appreciate it. Mark Kazimakis there at the Weather Bureau. If you're just tuning in, the Country Hour, we're broadcasting today from Katherine. We're here to talk about this virus that's popped up in watermelon crops. As we've just heard today, it's now been found in a pumpkin crop. There's been another zone quarantined off at Marakai. There's been more crops added to this list of potential host plants, growers in the region losing crops, changes at a federal level on how to import seeds into Australia. So much going on. So it's wonderful to have Faye Miller, the Mayor of Katherine, in the studio to have a chat. Thanks, Faye. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Matt, and thanks, listeners.
I just want to rattle off a couple of things that's happened in the last few months. We've had two iron ore mines in this region go into voluntary administration, and now the issue with this virus. What impacts this all had on Katherine?
Well, this is something that none of us saw coming, of course. Mining is a boom or bust, and can be boom or bust, and we weren't expecting it to be quite bust that quickly.
Yeah.
But for the vegetables, for the melons, and now adding to that the pumpkins, that's just devastating. It's really devastating for this region. It's even more devastating for those growers. And, my heart just goes out to them. It's just such a long haul for them, and it's so depressing for them. It's their livelihood, for goodness sake. And it's something we've always prided ourselves on in this region of having.
And it's been growing, hasn't it, Faye?
Absolutely.
Can I ask for your own personal thoughts on how it's been handled by the Department of Primary Industry and such?
Well, I think considering it's a new virus, I think they've handled it very well. I mean, it must put them in a dreadful position to have to give this dreadful news, you know, to the growers. There's no doubt about it. And to also tell them what the consequences are and how they're going to eradicate it, because we obviously have nothing to follow around Australia. So we've got to set the benchmark here in the Territory. It is a really challenging one for the industry, and it's certainly for the department.
Yeah.
I listened to a couple of the guys talking and I thought, that must be just the hardest thing.
It's not the only thing on their plate. They've got the banana freckle
exactly,
as well.
Exactly, yeah.
I'm trying to get a sense of around town, like, say, all of the backpackers. Now, instead of picking melons, I don't know what they're doing. Are you noticing that impact in town?
Well, I haven't seen as many of them around. Hopefully nothing will happen to the mango industry.
No, it's fine. It's going
that
okay.
One's fine. Yeah. That was because we've always been definitely pest-free and definitely free of all things for our mango, so I hope that continues. But it certainly will have a marked effect. It'll have a flow-on effect to the town, and not only in attracting backpackers here and for work for them, that's a flow-on to the tourism industry. It's a flow-on to health, it's a flow-on to education,
yeah,
and all the retail industry as well. And, of course, for the growers, it's also irrigation, it's hardware. It is just actually devastating, the more you look at it.
Well, on the service providers, you think of the people that provide the fertiliser, chemicals, the trucking companies.
That's
we
right.
were hoping to have some of these people on the Country Hour, and hopefully our listeners can appreciate that a lot of these are quite big companies, and the local rep's not in a position to talk on such a sensitive topic.
Mm.
But someone was telling me something simple as back freight. So a truck that brings up all sorts of goodies for the people of Katherine and Darwin relies on picking up melons for the back freight. That's how they make a bit of extra money. All of a sudden, if that's missing, the price of those goods to come up in the first place has to go up a
Absolutely.
Bit more.
Absolutely. It is. It's just that that flow-on effect that people don't realise. They just don't realise. I thought John said it very well when he said, just really appreciate, you know, what we can go into the supermarket and buy. Because,
thank you, farmers.
Yeah,
thank
absolutely you thank you. I come off the farm. I come from a farm in South Australia, and I watched my dad go through droughts. And look, I really know, we never went hungry, ever, because we went to the ocean. You know, Dad always went fishing. But I can see the impact that this is going to have on our local people here, and truly, I really feel for them. I have no idea what this community can do to help them, but I know that they've got a long road ahead. I really do know they have a long road ahead.
Faye Miller, thanks for your time on the Country Hour today.
Thanks very much,
Matt. We appreciate
it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Faye Miller there, the Mayor of Katherine. That's where we're broadcasting from today. Now, more on this story. At a federal level, there's been some drastic changes made to the rules on importing seeds. The Federal Ag Minister, Barnaby Joyce, has announced imported cucurbit seeds will now need to be tested and found to be free of this cucumber green mottle mosaic virus. There are concerns that this boost to Australia's seed biosecurity could lead to higher costs for growers and cause a bottleneck of seeds coming into the country. Nick Leminski is the Horticulture Chairman of the Australian Seed Federation, and that's the peak body for the nation's seed industry. He says the seed industry is in favour of this testing, but the department's proposed regime is problematic.
It's different to what the international testing regime is. So there is an international seed federation division called ISHI-VEG that put together testing protocols. And there is a testing protocol actually developed by the International Seed Testing Association for cucumber green mottle mosaic virus. The test that the department are moving towards is a lot higher in terms of seed number, therefore will be more expensive and potentially will have some influence on the pipeline of product.
So how much extra red tape does this announcement from the Federal Agriculture Department create, and who will be paying for that?
It's a testing protocol and regime that was not previously on the species. Having said that, the seed generally by quite a lot of the major seed companies was tested in the past. So if it was an international test, it would be easier to comply with. With this, it actually means companies would almost have to do two tests, because they would test routinely at a 2,000 seed level. but that doesn't comply with the Department of Agriculture's requirements, so a second test would have to be done per batch of seed.
But that's fair enough, given one of these companies could have potentially brought in the disease in the first place, even though it does have its own testing regimes. They're not always 100% accurate within these companies.
Look, the real answer to that, no disease test is 100% accurate, because the only way you get 100% accuracy is you test all the seed.
So to do two tests then is fair enough, because the company can do it for its own security so it knows itself that it doesn't have the disease, and then Australia's biosecurity can do it again as a way of double-checking, and it benefits both the seed company who's already done it and Australia, so it doesn't risk bringing the disease in.
Yeah, it adds costs, and you know that there are other pathways that the virus can move by. It's a pretty stable virus, so it's like it's mechanically spread and it spreads very easily. There's no 100% guarantee that the seed that came in was through a recognised reputable company. We don't know that. So I think what we want to highlight is that the test is going to increase costs.
Who will be wearing those costs? Will that be passed on to the grower?
I would suggest, yes, that some of the costs would be passed on to the grower. But I think more importantly, the testing at a research and development level, currently there are a couple of companies in Australia doing almost breeder selection work. So that's very small quantities of seed, and those would be restricted enormously because of the way the small seed testing is suggested and being done. That will only be done onshore in Australia, so that'll take a lot of time.
How open will these seed producing companies be, given that it is a bad look for the business to be seen as potentially providing infected seeds to a nation? Or how sure are you that these seed-producing companies will be compliant with authorities' investigations?
Well, it's regulated, so they have to. Otherwise, the seed can't get into Australia.
Global seed producer and supplier Syngenta has welcomed the federal government's announcement, but says it's confident its seeds are not connected to the outbreak in the Northern Territory. The company's head of corporate affairs for Australasia, Robert Cairns, believes it's unlikely Syngenta is responsible for bringing the virus in.
Yeah, Marty, Syngenta has certainly been working with Biosecurity Australia, the Northern Territory Department of Primary Industries, and the industry up there to address this issue. Syngenta's actually been testing our seeds since 2012 for this virus, and in that testing that we've done to date, it has shown that the seed has been free of the virus.
So how certain are you that Syngenta isn't one of the companies involved in potentially bringing this virus in?
Marty, we'll certainly work in with Biosecurity Australia and the industry to do that. We're just really, conscious of the fact that, you know, that seed is a potential source, and we want to do everything we can do to make sure that, that it's not from our seed, I guess. These testings are never 100%, I guess, but, we've certainly done all the testing, to date, and it's shown to be clear. So we hope that continues, Marty.
Seed suppliers Monsanto and Bayer were also contacted for comment. The Australian Seed Federation says the new seed testing protocols could also mean delays for growers. Nick Leminski again.
From the industry side, there's still, concerns that there will be disruption of supply because a lot of the seed is just in time. There's seasons where varieties are used, and then if they don't get into that season, they're not used. So we are a bit concerned about potential delays in getting seed into growers in time with the current testing system that's going to be put in place, because we don't have 100% clarity exactly how and when they're going to be able to get it all up and running.
That's Nick Leminski from the Australian Seed Federation. That story by Marty McCarthy. There's more information up online if you search for ABC Rural. Across the territory, this is The Country Hour. I'm joined now by Dr. Jessica Lai, who is AusVeg's Biosecurity Coordinator. AusVeg is the leading horticultural body representing Australia's 9,000 veggie and potato growers. Afternoon, Dr. Jessica.
How are you going, Matt? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, thanks for your time. AusVeg is offering support to growers. In what way?
Yeah, that's right. Well, AusVeg is taking an active role in limiting the spread of the virus, and we're liaising with relevant government bodies on this issue. We're providing advice with stakeholders such as the growers and the Northern Territory Farmers Association. And we're also doing our utmost to provide up-to-date information regarding the current status of the pest to the parties just as quickly as we possibly can.
Because in the cucurbit family, what falls under the AusVeg banner? Because my understanding was you guys don't necessarily deal with melons and such.
No, that's right. The ones that we need to be aware of at the moment are the zucchini, so they fall under the summer squash banner, and also the cucumbers.
Yeah. Now, we've got a lot of the Asian growers in Darwin's rural area. They are members of AusVeg and they're signatories to the National Plant Health Deed. Can you tell us what that means in terms of perhaps being eligible for compensation and reimbursement, that type of thing?
Yeah, well, look, Matt, just at this stage, as the full extent of the pest incursion has yet to be elucidated, and surveillance activities are continuing, and this includes testing other cucurbit crops to assess the host range of this particular strain of CGMMV. As the situation continues to be assessed and more information comes forward and the situation moves forward, AusVeg will be communicating with relevant cucurbit growers and will be certainly keeping them updated just as new information comes to light.
And just quickly, can I get your thoughts on how you think this has all been handled?
Well, various quarantine measures have been put into place by the NTDPIF. These quarantine measures are quite strict. They involve restricting movement of infected host species from properties and also restricting movement of vehicles and equipment from these properties. As you would know, the seed testing measures did come into play this week, and these testing measures relate to cucurbit seeds, and also processes are underway to control the threat. And AusVeg is doing all that we can within that framework to assist these growers at this time.
Jessica Lai, thanks so much for your time on our Country Hour today. Appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you.
Dr. Jessica Lai there from AusVeg. It is 5 minutes to two here on the Country Hour, broadcasting from Catherine. Wow, what a terrible time for the melon industry in this region. I mean, the melon industry in the territory and around Catherine, it's been booming in recent years. It's tripled in value over the last 5 years. And a lot of growers from the southern states have actually expanded their business to this region, to Catherine, to cash in on what has been a perfect growing window. One such farmer is John Hendricks, who is based in Trentham Cliffs in New South Wales. Last year, he expanded his melon operation to Catherine. He has spent $1.5 million developing this new property and growing his first crop of NT melons. And guess what? The virus, it's been found in his crop, and he's had to destroy the whole thing. Can you imagine that? Mr. Hendricks says signs his crop were affected with the virus started to show early in the season.
During the season, we were having some issues with quality, and eventually it was found that we had the cucumber mosaic virus causing our quality issues. We certainly got to understand the virus and how it works, and probably something we didn't want to do. But anyway, since then, it's been declared a quarantine zone, so even prior to us receiving official notification, we destroyed all our crop. We've cleaned the property up, we've burnt all the rubbish, and now it's just a fallow paddock.
So how early on did you detect that you thought something was going wrong in your crop?
Oh, look, I've got to say that in August, we certainly, there was something going on that wasn't right, and we were having some quality issues, and we just didn't know what it was. It was starting to do our heads in. Couldn't see anything that we were doing wrong. So it had been around for a fair while in the area.
How much do you think you've lost as a result of ploughing in your crops here in Catherine?
Look, we've lost a huge amount up there, you know, with quality issues mid-season onwards. And I think we ploughed in five patches that we never harvested at all. And the five previous patches, we had huge quality issues, which was certainly hurting our brand name. And we just weren't harvesting the tons off those patches either. So I don't want to put a figure next to it. I know what we've spent up there this year. The season is, we haven't finalised everything, but, it was a new farm for us. We'd just developed up there. We were only new to the area. It was our first season. We'd spent something like $1.5 million developing the property for the growing of melons. So it's a huge loss to us in that alone.
Wow, obviously, yes, that's a pretty big hit. You've just moved there, and now you have to shut things down straight away. Have you put any thought into what you might be able to do with the land at all as your lease continues?
Well, at this point, we're just taking a deep breath. You know, we've really got to just stand back and weigh it all up. We're still there. We still have the land there in Katherine. As we know, we can't grow anything at all for the next 12 months. It's just got to be a fallow paddock. And then where we go from there in the next 12 months, it'll depend on if everybody in the area in Fox Road does the right thing, you know, because we hope that in 12 months they won't find any signs of the virus and it might be all over in 2 years. But, you know, my worrying thing is if not everyone does the right thing in the area, they find the virus still floating around. Yeah, 2 years could become 5 years. That's my greatest fear.
Do you think you'll have to lay off any workers up here in Katherine as a result of what's happened to your melon crop?
Oh, there's no question about that. You know, we had 4 permanent staff there and there's no longer any work for them this next season, as well as our itinerant labour to do with melon harvest. You know, we don't have any work for them without growing a crop. Not only along with that, is all our other suppliers, chemical suppliers, machinery suppliers, fuel, just even the local supermarket, you know, all those people, it all flows on to the community and through small business. I'm sure it's going to feel it in some way.
There's been a lot of talk about where this virus has come from, and there's a lot of speculation has been that it's come in via the seed. Are you concerned that it might already be in other parts of Australia and not been detected yet?
Oh, that's definitely possible. You'd never say never, because the strong belief by everybody is that it has come in from infected seed. I'd be surprised if Katherine's the only place in Australia. Now, these seeds are sold all over Australia. Seed companies sell not only to the Katherine region.
That's John Hendricks from New South Wales. In the last year, has started up a melon operation near Katherine. And you're speaking there to Dan Fitzgerald. That wraps up our program from Katherine today. Uncle on the text says the situation is devastating and you at the Country Hour have done a great job covering the issue. Uncle, we appreciate that. We pride ourselves on being the Territory's leading source of rural news. Our thoughts are with all growers. We'll be back on your radio same time on Monday. We'll do it all again. Have a good weekend and, hey, keep it rural.